For November the 15th, 2019, we talk about Grindstone, Far Cry New Eden, and We Were Here Together. Welcome to Level 305. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meismith.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Welcome one and welcome all to 305.
Yeah, huh?
Yeah. I don't have anything like that hugely special to talk about, but I don't know. We're here.
We hit the big 305, the milestone.
Everybody
it's a
talks.
Weird number. I don't know what anniversary it is.
Cobalt.
Tungsten, yeah.
I about said tungsten, but then I shifted it up and said cobalt.
I choose to believe that you actually meant like kobold as the D&D little lizard creature.
A kobold.
Yeah,
say that five times fast. Yeah, I don't know, Ben. I'll throw it to you. What you been up to?
Not much. I had my dad come in town to visit over the weekend, so that was cool. Apparently, one of the ways people are celebrating Veterans Day is they had a showing of Doctor Strangelove at Cinerama, so we went and saw that. A movie about the pointlessness of war. It seems like a weird way to celebrate veterans, but yeah.
I guess
it is a good way to support them by not sending them to war in the first place, but whatever. I don't want to get political.
No, it's fine. Yeah. Support veterans by making sure there are fewer of them.
Yeah.
I mean, in the good way, not in like a Rambo kind of way. I'm sorry. Please don't jail me. Don't cancel me.
It's a very slippery floor to walk on. You just fall and land with a shoe in your mouth.
Interpret that as charitably as you can. But Dr. Strangelove, it's been a while since I've seen that.
Yeah, I hadn't seen it for like maybe 10 or 12 years or so. It's good. I mean, it's weird to see a movie that holds up after 50 years, but it's fun. Yeah. What else? I also just got to eat some good food. My aunt came up from Olympia, so that was nice. I took him to a dumpling place, which is probably my new favorite place to eat in Seattle. So
nice.
Yeah.
What type of dumplings?
It's called Din Tai Fung. It's from Taiwan originally, but the plus side of it is if you go with the right group of people, it's kind of like family style. So you just order a bunch of food and everyone just kind of shares like a small bit of each of the plates.
Yeah.
And it's I think that's a really great experience for eating
family
food.
Style thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah. How about you, David?
Not really a whole lot going on around here, honestly. It's suddenly getting darker and colder. But other than that, just kind of life.
Yep. The sun sets at 8 a.m.
By suddenly, it is not an exaggeration. It was just, blackness tonight.
Yeah. No. A gender reveal went wrong. And all of a sudden, the cloud is full of soot, or the sky is full of soot. Never shall the sun hit our.
What is the deal with the? What is the deal with the whole like gender reveal thing? I don't get that.
White people want gifts.
Fair enough.
We really have a bad lot in society, so we got to make up for it by getting gifts. Yeah.
I think that at some point somebody thought that it would be cute if they didn't learn the, let's say, biological sex, the presumed biological sex of their child, and they would have somebody make a cake that the inside of it was colored, and they would have a party and they would cut the cake open and the color of the cake would determine like, oh my gosh, we're going to have a boy, or it's going to, have an assigned biological sex as a boy when it comes out. Yay. It's a big thing for social media. And then people started adding explosives I think
it's all the people that made the pipe bomb and killed someone.
Yeah, no, they straight they straight up iced one of the. I think they iced the kid's aunt, maybe something like that.
I think it was grandmother, actually.
Oh, okay, yeah. Well, yeah.
So they Michael Bayified gender reveal parties.
Yeah, a plane they crashed. Basically,
what?
No.
Yeah. No, like a plane crashed. Rude gender reveal plane crash. There was also a gender reveal. Gender reveal stunt involving pink water caused small plane crash in Texas. Injuring how many? Injuring one. So yeah, I guess
the one.
Good.
One I saw, they took a metal cylinder and like filled it partway with gunpowder. And then, partway with, confetti of the appropriate color.
Okay.
And then the problem is they then, nailed on the top or something like that.
Oh, no.
That then becomes a problem.
Yeah. So what we did was we took a little bit of bleach, a little bit of ammonia, mixed up with some food coloring, and we threw it into an enclosed space. Border Patrol agents' gender reveal party ignited a 47,000-acre wildfire in Arizona.
Wow. Yeah. I'm surprised that you can have a wildfire that big in Arizona.
That's a lot of scrubland, a lot of sagebrush. Yeah,
but it's burning the most beautiful shade of pink.
I don't even know where that we were talking about the sun never being up. Yeah.
Yeah, that seems like the more chill way to do it. Just, get a bunch of edibles and whichever color you totally feel, that's going to be the appropriate gender.
Yeah.
I don't know what purple means, but
I mean, if it's my experience with edibles, my child is going to be sleep gender.
Yep. That's what's the comedian? God damn it. I'm going to forget her name. She has an amazing act, but she's lesbian and has a bit where someone told her, you're not lesbian, you're trans, and she's like, how are you assuming, or how are you identifying for someone else? And then she's like, actually, I do have an admission. I have to come out as tired.
Oh, man. Speaking of sleep gendered, I went and saw Dr. Sleep last Ooh. Thursday. Yeah.
How was it?
It's good.
What is this?
Dr. Sleep. It's an adaptation of Stephen King's sequel to The Shining.
It's The Shininger.
Yeah. I mean, if you don't go into it expecting The Shining, which why would you expect The Shining? Stanley Kubrick is dead. You are being unrealistic. Why would you expect that of a movie? It's really good. I like it quite a bit. The performances are great. It's a good adaptation of the novel, which I thought was a good story. I liked it quite a bit. I like exploring the implications of, just like there are other psychics out there. What do they go mm-hmm. through, and what could what besides the Overlook Hotel feeds on them?
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, I liked it quite a bit. I know it got middling reviews or whatever, but I thought it was really well made.
Stephen King has been on a roll, hasn't he? Yeah. I don't know if he decided he needed money all of a sudden or what.
I feel like that's all relative. I mean, he was already one of the most successful modern writers.
Yeah.
This means that he was on a roll 20 or 30 years ago, I think.
Yes. Yeah. There have been lulls in good Stephen King adaptations, I would say the early 2000s wasn't necessarily a great time. The 90s was a great time for adaptations. You had Misery, you had Shawshank Redemption, you had Green Mile, And now, there's just a bunch of this is kind of having a heyday. Wait,
are you just glossing over the Langoliers?
Yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to gloss over the Langoliers.
Excuse you.
Holy shit, guys! We couldn't have written this any better. I'm looking at Destructoid, and one of the headlines is "The Apocalypse in Death Stranding was caused by a gender reveal stunt gone wrong." I kid you not.
I saw that. That was I think that's a post for one of their podcast episodes.
Oh shit!
Oh yeah. But that's really all that I have going on. I could talk about how I bought a new winter coat or about how it's snowing right now, but that's not necessarily that entertaining. Dr. Sleep.
So
I would say it's good. I would say go see it.
So on the subject of like horror-esque things, I posted on the Slack. I stumbled today upon an article just linking to videos of all of the various commercials that David Lynch has made over the years.
Oh, Lord.
And a bunch of them are just very weird. However, the one for littering in New York is pretty epic.
Huh. I will need to look at this. This lines up with my interest. Oh.
To 40 minutes later when we get done watching all the David Lynch commercials.
No, I mean, I'll probably watch it like tomorrow.
There is one. He apparently made one for PlayStation 2, huh. Which is technically on topic. So, and it's very weird.
I don't know. We will have to report back on that later. Dennis, what's going on with you?
Not much. It's an exciting time in Deck of Wonders land. So I've been running the GoFundMe for the game for about a month now, I think. And the interesting thing about GoFundMe is you don't have to put like an end date on the campaign. But I think I'm about ready to go to the next phase. So if you're listening to this on Friday, you officially have 4 days to go and get the game or get the print and play prototype of the game before GoFundMe goes away. So the campaign is going to end on November 19th. That's a Tuesday. And basically whatever funds are collected from that, half of them will go to the 612 Humanitarian Relief Fund, mm-hmm. Which defrays legal and medical costs of Hong Kong protesters. And then half of it will go towards art and development for the final version of Deck of Wonders, which will hopefully be on Kickstarter sometime next year. So, yeah, exciting times. I've just been amazed by everyone's generosity so far. Thank you so much. If you're listening and you've bought it already, please tell any of your friends or go check it out yourself. And yeah, you got just 4 days left if you're listening to this on Friday.
Nice. Do you have an illustrator?
I do. I actually have a team of three people identified. I don't have contracts signed, so I don't know what the etiquette is around.
No, you don't have to name them. I just if you needed a hookup, I know illustrators from my past life. So
illustrations are actually one of my favorite parts. They remind me a lot of the like first and second edition D&D Monster Manual illustrations.
Yeah, you had said that. So for this version of the game, it's so funny. This is like a, you know, limited edition EX Special Sigma version of the game, just because of the way things came together. But it's the concept art for the game, which is meant to kind of just evoke the general feel or idea of the card. And my sister, Elsa Furia, did all the concept art for the game so far. And it is, you know, it's absolutely wonderful in its own right. It's just it's not what I'm thinking of for the final art. Yeah. And her main medium is painting versus kind of the digital art style I have in mind.
Gotcha.
So then I met some illustrators at Gen Con. Or met an illustrator who then works with other people that she recommended. And like I said, I won't name specific people just yet, mm-hmm. But I'm very excited that everyone I'm working with is either a woman of color or a non-binary person of color. So it is, it wasn't me going and seeking it out. It's just like, oh, hey, I found this team of people that I love their work, and hey, it's a very diverse group too. So I'm very excited about that. But the prototype version, it's a print and play. So it's just a file that you can print out on your own. Don't have to worry about shipping, that has the special kind of concept art for it. And then Elsa is doing a unique title card for the game that has one of the characters, one of the cards in Hong Kong protest gear. And I'll link you guys in the chat so you can react. I need to actually pull it down. But I absolutely love it. So excited. Elsa did an amazing job. And this is like the one chance to get that version of the game. So it's $10. And like I said, half goes to development of the game. Half goes to the 612 Humanitarian Relief Fund. So that ends on Tuesday the 19th. You can just go to GoFundMe and search Deck of Wonders. Or if you want to type it right in, you can do bit.ly/DOWGFM, which is Deck of Wonders GoFundMe.
Fantastic.
Yeah, like I said, I've just been floored by people's generosity so far. It's freaking amazing. and people are too kind, especially like people that I've never even you know, through this network or just not, I have no idea where they came from. But
yeah,
the most heartening thing is when the people just out of the blue come in and are very excited. That gets me even more excited for the game.
Does your past as a researcher, like, does it kill you that you don't know where they came from? Do you want to like just interrogate them? Like, what was your path? What path did you want to get here? How did you find this hidden headquarters?
What metric do you come from?
What segment do you fit? How can I typify you? What's your pixel?
Where's the tracking pixel? Where's the tracking pixel?
Yeah, no, I've been thrilled with just so many different people coming in from so many different places in my life. It really, the sense of momentum is exciting, which means I want to push forward into that next phase of getting the final art for the Kickstarter done.
Nice.
So yeah, Tuesday, November 19th is your last day to get the Deck of Wonders print and play prototype. Jump on that bit.ly/DOWGFM. I'm going to stop pumping my stuff and we'll talk about more video game stuff now.
Yeah. Before I go into the rest of the episode, I was about to close a tab when I was looking at those disasters there. I'm just going to read this headline and we can meditate on that for the rest of the episode. this startup is saving crops by making, quote, super bees.
Oh, no.
That seems plausible.
That is absolutely terrifying.
What could possibly go wrong?
I encountered a regular bee while raking the other day, and it was a panic attack.
I mean, like, yeah.
There's to no be fair, that isn't even in the top five, like, most horrifying things I've seen about startups doing this week.
Yeah, yeah. I hope that I don't know, this was like 6 years ago when I was working at the marketing agency. We had a client who came to us and they had this special helmet that. It was like a headpiece. It was a hat that had electrodes in it, and the idea was transcranial with the idea being this could be like a meditation aid. But like, they started talking more about like not just like therapeutic uses for it or whatever, but like ways to send, just like ways for marketers to control how people feel. And like, we ended up not working with them. I pressed very strongly to not work with the company, to not make propaganda for the company that made mind control
helmets.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like if a company's going to be, making mind control helmets, I want to be on the inside of that proposition, not on the outside.
It was weird, man. They were very offended that we jumped to that conclusion for them, but it was, yeah.
Wait, look, at least you know like how they're conclusion. Screwing, yeah. It sounds like what they were saying.
Spotty history with the company. However, one thing was when I raised my voice about a client being sketchy, they generally listened. So, look at that little troll.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're real sassy. Got his hands on his hips. Yeah.
Guff from no one. Loaded for bear.
Quite good. Cool. Well, we've got the usual kind of show for you. We've got the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss. And why don't we get started with...
The grind.
The grind, where we talk about the things we have been playing over the past period of time or so. I'm going to make an educated guess and say, Ben, you have something new for us.
I don't. Were you thinking Death Stranding?
Yes. Yeah.
All right. Well, I have new stuff, but it's not that.
Okay.
I've watched people play it on Twitch, and it looks fun enough to try out once, but I have something else I need to play, right? I think. Anyway.
Maybe.
Yeah. Whatever. Anyway, the things that I've been playing right now, I've played two co-op games that I wanted to talk about.
Okay.
First one, Strange Brigade. I got it. I got some friends. I bought I think, 3 copies of it for Halloween. And so I've played that a couple. I played through just the first mission of it so far. But it's fun. It's a really, if you're kind of tired of playing Left 4 Dead because you've already played it every mission, like 3 or 4 times over at least. Yeah, it's a really good, it's like a breath of fresh air. It's basically like Left 4 Dead if it's like with an Uncharted skin is kind of what it seems like. But I guess it has its own style of being kind of old-timey on top of that. But yeah, it's a good, fun co-op game. Just mindlessly kill things and shoot stuff and have fun with friends.
Which character are you playing?
I played as the dude with, I think he has maybe a semi-automatic gun to start with. And then his like upgrade is he releases like scarabs that find him and kill people.
Like Brendan Fraser's The Mummy.
Okay. The scientist.
Yeah. Yes to both questions, I guess. there's 2 male characters, right? And he's the younger male character, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I know we've kind of already covered the game when you guys talked about it when you first got it. Yeah, I think it's definitely something to put on a wish list. So when it goes on sale, it's worth scooping up if you can find people to play it with. Yeah, so I'm definitely looking forward to playing that some more as well.
How many friends on average are you playing with it each time? Like, is it 1 and 2 or is it like 4?
So I only played 1 chapter, so in only 1 sitting of it, but I played it with 1 other friend. So it was 2 people, but 2 of my friends have the game at least. It's it is not for Mac, so I did not get it for my friend Brian Perk. But I probably wouldn't have got it for him anyway, but you know, that's, I'm just saying that for plausible deniability.
I really don't like him that much overall, so
that's,
I just feel
that's the running joke, yeah. recommend that game. Definitely worth picking up, especially if it's on sale. I think the full price is something kind of crazy, like maybe $50 or something like that. Mm-hmm. I think I got a
release.
Yeah, I think I got it on sale for like $10, maybe 10 or 15, something like that. I think that's, yeah, I think that's worth it. All right. So any questions about that?
Mm-mm.
Onward to the next co-op game. The other game that I played is a game that's called We Were Here Together.
Okay.
All right.
It's I think they've made other games. I only stumbled upon this one because one of the streamers that I watched played it when it came out. It came out, I think, in early November, late October. But it's like a co-op puzzle solving game. And a lot of it involves you being in 2 separate rooms and having to try and communicate with one another to figure out what the puzzle is. So the only kind of mechanic that you have when you're walking around in the game is you have a walkie-talkie that you can voice chat with who you're playing with. It's very specifically a 2-player game. And so what you do is there's some sort of problem. You communicate with the person like, this is what I see. What do you see? And then you try and cobble together what it is that you have to solve. And I think there's 10 different stages for it. And so I've played that over maybe 3 or 4 different sittings. And so I think I'm on chapter 9, the second to last one. It's an interesting game. It's not like an amazing game. It kind of like has a similar gameplay as like what Portal 2 does. But the only difference is it's more asymmetric. You're more sandboxed with like the knowledge that you have. Mm-hmm. So that can be a good thing because then it's not necessarily one person solving it all the time. You know, like you need to pool information from the other person. So that's actually, I think, a good game design change from something like Portal 2.
Yeah.
I don't know. It has a cutesy art style. Some of the puzzles are kind of annoying and kind of like, I don't know, maybe like too hard to communicate over. But a few of them like hit the sweet spot and are really good. So, so it's another good co-op game. I think since it's specifically 2 players, that's like a really good couch co-op game if your couches are in 2 different rooms, I guess.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
Something you said made me realize that sandbox means opposite things in game or in game design and in software development. One implies wide open and the other implies that it's all sequestered.
Yeah.
I don't know, it's just that you said that and I was like, wait a minute, how does that? I was like, oh, software. There we go.
My bad. Yeah.
No. It's not your fault. You said it accurately. It was just a different context than I expected it.
Yeah.
I mean, they're both wide open. It just depends on if you let other people in, right?
it's wide open, but exclusive.
Yeah, software engineers don't like people.
I had never heard about this game. That sounds like a really fun concept. There's a sequel. Yeah. There's a sequel. We were here too.
So that's the thing, is I think that one, I think there was a solo version of this game, like We Were Here.
Okay.
And I think that's the sequel to that. And then I think We Were Here Together is the co-op version of it.
Gotcha. Okay.
I think. I haven't dug deep into the details of the game company and all the games that they made, but that's the impression I get.
That is quite possibly the most confusing way to possibly handle naming those games you could pick.
Yeah.
Have you had anybody rage quit on you yet?
No, because I've only played. I've played with a friend, so gotcha. That makes it harder for them to do that. You have to still talk to them, you know. So, no, but I mean, there have been a couple instances. We discovered this accidentally because at a certain point in the game, you've gone down two different paths, and so you can't, like, there's no way for you to like walk to their room and see what they're seeing or whatever. But one time we accidentally made it so when you start a game, you can switch the rooms that you're in, like who's in which one. And so we accidentally did that one time. So that was one time where we got complete information because we had seen both rooms or whatever. But if we didn't do that, it would have been really hard. Some of the puzzles are a bit challenging. But it's good.
Yeah, it looks really neat.
Yeah, and that one, I would say, that is another game that's probably worth $5 to $10. I would not go too overboard than that.
I mean, like the base price is like $13. That seems perfectly reasonable.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. You can get the bundle of all of them for like $21. Not that we're like, this isn't like the home Steam shopping network or whatever.
The other thing, that would be a good game to do a stream of, I think, for like... Duckstream or something like that.
You're right. We would have to, that'd be weird because I feel like it would be crazy not to see both screens for the streaming audience. So we would need to have like
split screen.
We would need to have a third person
videotaping themselves watching both of your channels.
Yes, and just ripping their hair out. Yeah.
Just have a commentator, you know, play by play.
But I like this. I like the games that require verbal communication. I mean, more so than just reloading. I'm thinking of like, you know, keep talking, nobody explodes, et cetera. Yeah. Neat. Well, yeah, I mean, like I knew about Strange Brigade, but I had not heard of We Were Here Together. And the visual style of it is real cute.
Yeah. Has anyone played Death Stranding? Should we segue into that?
No, I have not. I picked it up, but I can do mine because it's basically nothing. This past week I've been mainlining Deus Ex Human Revolution for Watch Out for Fireballs, so I've not had an awful lot of chance to play things for fun. I did finish Fatal Frame 2 over the weekend, and that was profoundly disappointing.
Yeah, it looked like a slog, man.
Yeah, I remember liking the game back when I played it closer to its launch. This is a horror game, came out in 2003. I believe this one came out in 2003. You play as a young girl who is trapped in a haunted village, and you're being attacked by ghosts, and ghosts are blocking your way, and you have a special camera that does damage to them and exorcises them, etc., and you're trying to rescue your sister. The flavor's great. It looks amazing. Some good spooks. Story is good. But man, oh man, the combat, guys. The combat.
Can I give you a little bit of context of how I experienced this?
Yes.
I was trying to explain to my dad what Twitch was, and so I was showing him the stream.
Oh, no. He heard me. Like,
part of the entertainment is you get to see Cole get really frustrated.
Oh, he heard my potty mouth.
Nah, it was good.
Yeah, no, as a baseline, the combat is pretty rough. I don't remember it being as like selective. So something that is frustrating to me is when you're fighting an enemy in a game and they just decide, I'm not going to take damage for a while. You know, either they leave the arena or they go incorporeal or whatever. In this one, you know, the game is relatively slow paced. You center the camera over an enemy and there's like a little meter that charges up. And you do the most damage when the meter is, you know, charged up. Usually it spikes when they're about to do an attack or whatever. But sometimes, like, the attack window is, you know, about half a second, or maybe, you know, it looks like the you can do an attack, but you can't. Stuff like that. Yeah.
Is the attack always take a picture?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean the camera is your only weapon. You know, you have like you have special film you can use, like you can use special powers to like slow them down or whatever. But the final straw, like I had really put a lot of time into this. I wanted to beat it, you know, just throwing good money after bad, throwing good time after bad. And I got to the end, and the final boss of the game, it kills you in one hit. If it touches you, you die. And the last save point before the final boss is probably if you don't like run all the way back and save, it is about 25 minutes of incredibly difficult resource draining combat between you and it. So like I died to it once and I was like, hey guys, I'm at the finish line. I'm just going to, I'm going to stream a YouTube of the endings of this game and we're going to be done. I was really disappointed. I remember liking it. It's a very highly regarded game. I just couldn't stop dressing it down, during the stream. It just does not hold up.
Oof. Yeah.
Yeah.
Can't go home.
Bom,
bom. Yeah. Oh, well, what the hell? So, don't like that, but it can't hurt me anymore. I'm not playing it anymore. So,
I just came to the realization maybe the reason that the ghost hunters on Sci-Fi or wherever they are never see any ghosts is because with them. All those cameras, yeah, they're exercising them all.
Yeah, I mean, in a way, they're re-murderers.
The murderer.
Red Rummery, Red Rummer, Red Rummer. Oh fuck! Let's see here, David. What you been playing?
Yeah, so been continuing on with Outer Worlds. Not a ton really noteworthy. I haven't had as much time to play overall this week, so you know, didn't really get far enough that there's anything super noteworthy. I did find a new like most depressing thing in the game. Which is you can in fact drive one of the NPCs to commit suicide.
Good God! No. Which is, really?
Yes. So there's a character that's basically like a corporate stooge who, in order to try to advance in his career with the hopes of, you know, finding meaning in life. He basically does some risky stuff and a whole bunch of people die. And he sends you off to, like, kind of salvage it. And if you fail to salvage it and then point out that all he's accomplished in his life is getting a lot of people killed, he will off himself. Jeez. Which is super, super dark.
It's, yeah, I don't know why I feel differently about that when compared to, you know, any number of like BioWare final dialogue boss fights where you essentially do the same thing. Like it maybe because you've been chasing them down and they are the villain of the story. And this is also a game like Outer Worlds. I haven't played it, but it seems like a game that plays a lot of stuff for comedy.
Yeah, it's also a thing where by that point, like the way it is in the way it is presented, it's the point in the story, I guess, when it happens, although it's not necessarily clear that that's going to be the result. it's you have already defeated this character. Like, you have to explicitly choose to basically defeat him and then guilt him. So yeah, so it is a little odd. Overall, I actually think the character's a fairly interesting one, because he's a character that's his actions and his overall, you know, kind of your initial vibe of him is very, very sympathetic. But if you go in and, like, you know, read his journals and stuff like that, he very much is motivated by, you know, an attempt, you know, a need to, like, feel like he has any purpose or meaning in life. And so there, I don't know, it does a good job of kind of getting the angle of, like, hey, super late stage capitalism can create these situations where people can, for somewhat understandable reasons, become complete monsters.
Yeah. I don't know. I think divorced of having played up to that point and just hearing about it, it still sounds like yikes. But I'm not here to, like, press judgment on it or anything. So
yeah,
I think we need to write Obsidian an email and check in and see if they're okay.
But it is funny, like, Outer, that game applies a very Borderlands-esque place in my mind.
Yeah.
Like you said, it just feels like a game for comedy or whatever that, you know, I know it's not, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of those things, it tends to... I would say there's a couple of things. It you know, is a little, you know, a game that kind of shifts tones fairly significantly, but I think it's also a game that a lot of the depressing stuff, or, you know, kind of cynical stuff it does by way of, you know, pointing out the absurdity of the situations.
Yeah.
But then sometimes, you know, along with that is just kind of, and then there's the actual consequences.
Yeah. Well, it's absurdity in the sense of, like, let's say Sartre, instead of it's absurdity in the sense of, like, Monty Python. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, other than that, let's see here. The biggest thing I did is actually I realized that I still have a couple weeks left on my subscription to Uplay Plus. And so I decided to pick out Far Cry New Eden and give that a run.
So that Far Cry New Eden is to Far Cry 5 as Blood Dragon is to Far Cry 3.
For the most part, with the exception that it is a direct sequel.
So it's like, what happens if the cult is right and the world does that? Right. Okay.
Exactly. And so it's kind of got a bit of a Mad Max type thing going on. You know, all of the animals are, you know, weird, like albino versions, or, you know, have glowing eyes, or, you know, various things like that. All of the weapon designs are actually really well done. They're all, you know, kind of the recognizable weapons from the previous games, but with very ad hoc repairs and stuff like that done. So a lot of your bayonets and things will be like half of a scissor, like duct tape to your gun, or you might. I'm currently using a double barreled shotgun where the barrels are held to the gun by hose clamps. You know, just kind of stuff like that. Overall, I think it's a much better game than Fallout 4, if for nothing else than it doesn't just randomly force you to do the story missions. It's also kind of interesting seeing some of the characters as depending on their age in the original game, either adults or as elderly people. So, for example, the woman that is, there's one of my favorite characters in the first game is basically a it's either Iraq or Afghanistan war veteran that's kind of your sniper. And basically by this point in the game, she's gone blind, but has become kind of the person who's taken on training and mentoring the resistance. Nice. Similarly, your kind of point of contact that kicks off the whole thing is basically one of the characters during Far Cry 4 was pregnant, and so this is now that that child that's now an adult. So yeah, overall it's pretty good. It's you know, a little bit you know, simplified from the previous games. From what I can tell, you can't get weapon attachments, things like that, or maybe I just haven't unlocked them yet, but at least at this point, just running around and shooting things and, you know, fighting mutant boars and whatnot is a lot of fun.
The way you describe the I was gonna say, the way that you describe the animals makes me really want an Annihilation video game.
Annihilation as in like the book or
the I mean both.
Guess the movie, but it was, yeah,
the visual presentation in the movie.
Okay, I haven't seen that. I'll have to check that out. But yeah, it's got a weird style. It sort of reminds me. So they make very, very heavy use of like neon pinks and stuff like that in this game, which is you know, kind of an interesting alternative to the normal, you know, Mad Max, you know, everything is brown sort of approach. So in particular, I think it's probably implied, or at least it was convenient to do an asset swap of in Fallout 4 or Fallout Far Cry 4. The cult has these flowers they grow that they basically used to make like some sort of hallucinogenic mind control drug.
They Batman Begins.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And this time around, in 4, they're all, you know, white and look fairly generic. This time around, they're this bright neon pink. Similarly, all of the highwaymen, the bandits, all of their equipment and areas are painted in this stuff that sort of looks like if you combined some sort of like tribal art with like graffiti art.
Okay.
They've got that sort of look going on. So yeah, it's pretty good. I don't know. It's one of those things where I don't think it's going to be a game that necessarily, you know, advances the media or whatever, but mm-hmm. you know, the nice thing about Far Cry is just it's kind of fun on its own merits.
It can just kind of be.
Yeah.
So
I do like the one weapon I've seen that they've added that's significantly different is a buzzsaw launcher that kind of its thing is it will ricochet, and the ricochets inexplicably track enemies pretty effectively. So you can use it to either A, just like shoot around corners at, you know, enemies that you can't see, or B, you know, shoot into a cluster of enemy and it'll ricochet and take them out. It's also somehow silent.
Of course.
So the one thing that is funny is, as far as I can tell, it's just supposed to be, you know, you're shooting blades that bounce around. However, the fact that it seeks enemies is at least somewhat in world, because its stated reason for it was invented by the woman who went blind so that she would be able to fight the enemies even though she couldn't actually see to aim at them.
Huh.
So I thought you were going to say it's explained in world because it's awesome.
Yeah.
The game definitely has shades of that. It also has kind of a weird thing. The main villains very much remind me of the main villains from the most recent Borderlands game that just came out. Just in terms of like their mannerisms and kind of the that sort of persona is very, very much shared, which is kind of funny to me. So
nice.
Yeah. Other than that, not something I've gotten a chance to play a whole lot of, but just as kind of a hey, this is a cool thing that exists. Warframe released its patch, so they released a new frame that's Grendel, which is basically the Warframe that is able to consume enemies, and that's kind of its abilities revolve around. And then,
so you're saying Warframe has a Warframe?
Yes. I'm exactly saying that.
Cool. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you for something.
Just wanted to
dumb.
Make sure we're all on the same page.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, no, I'm well aware. The puns have been made.
Gotcha. Okay. Nothing new under the sun. So it's a frame that can devour other frames whole.
Well, other enemies.
Okay.
Yeah. So I've unlocked. I haven't played it much. As I understand it, it can swallow them and get some sort of benefits. It can also then spit them out as projectiles. And can apparently just like roll into a ball and ping pong, and pinball all over the stage. So this is very much a game where it is not unusual for me to be in a match and my allies are doing something crazy that I have no idea what it actually is. So I've been in at least one match where the dude was ricocheting off the walls all over the place. I have no idea what it actually accomplishes, but it's definitely a thing.
Yeah.
And then the other big addition was they released their take on the Nemesis system from Shadow of Mordor.
Okay.
Although I have not actually had any enemies become my nemesis yet, so I can't really comment, but it's at least a thing that exists.
Anything else?
Nope, that's all I got.
Okie doke. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, so I've been playing a lot more of The Cycle.
Cool.
It has officially become the first free-to-play game where I've bought the Battle Pass.
Ooh.
Yeah, I was on the verge with Dauntless, and I'm glad I didn't because I kind of fell off of it shortly after. But it was $10 to get in on their Battle Pass, kind of gold tier or whatever you want to call it. But I just the potential for this game is so enormous that I could not. So that's fun. I am very much enjoying my daily challenges and having all my special little skins and banners and stuff. That's a lot of fun. So I get it now. I'm on the other side of the not pay to wins, but the battle pass your ears.
Now you are the support. Whale.
Yeah. Yes.
Does it help?
Fledgling whale.
does it help that this is a smaller, studio, not Respawn? This is a studio that you enjoy.
Yeah. Like I post in the Discord and there are devs that answer or they have a suggestion channel right now. And I've got a couple suggestions that they're like, yep, we're going to do that. That is wonderful. So that's kind of cool. So if you see in the game, this will this is actually me passing on a recommendation from David that I think is going to make it into the game, because David's been playing it as well. Which is, so in the game, it is, you know, player versus environment versus player. So the key focus is the objectives. It, when you kill someone, you get notoriety. And if you get too much notoriety, you get marked on the map and you get a bounty point put on your head. Basically being like, okay, we don't incentivize people killing other people, but it's okay to kill this person, and here they are. We will give you points to kill them because they've gone on a rampage. However, David pointed out, like, it's kind of BS that if you kill someone in self-defense, you know, if someone attacks you and you have to kill them, you get the same amount of notoriety as you do if you're hunting people down ruthlessly.
So they're tracking first blood now?
Yes.
So probably...
go ahead.
Probably just as a heads up, or as a kind of example, probably the most blatant example of this I've seen is you can basically down someone, and you know, either their teammate can revive them, or if they don't actually then get finished off within like 20 seconds, they would just, you know, come back to life and, you know, no penalties whatsoever. And I've had instances where someone came after me, I downed them, didn't finish them off, and went about my business. They came after me again. It's like, all right, we tried this once. And so I then finished them off, and then, you know, you still get notoriety.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, it's a fun little dichotomy. And so the suggestion was, you know, reduce the notoriety for self-defense kills, or reduce the notoriety given for kills when you were hit first, which is a really kind of cool idea of, you know, they were talking about, well, could you abuse that system? And like, well, if you can bait someone into hitting you first and still win the fight, you probably deserve the reduced notoriety. Like, that is not necessarily abuse. It's just being a badass.
Yeah. It's a Western trope.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And so that's kind of cool to your original question, Cole, to feel like the team is, you know, there and listening, and that the community is small enough that you have a voice is really, really cool.
Yeah.
So yeah, I've been playing a lot of that. And then the other game that I discovered through Apple Arcade, I got a 1 month free trial of Apple Arcade and saw someone talking about this game online, is a little puzzle game called Grindstone. Does that ring any bells for anyone?
No, there's a lot on Apple Arcade.
There's a lot on Apple Arcade, and there's a lot of grid colored gem puzzle games out there. So it is not surprising that you haven't heard of Grindstone. But guys, Grindstone is pretty fun.
Wow, this is made by Capybara.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah. And you play
freakishly large rodent?
No, the studio. I think they're named after the Capybara, the rodent. But I think that this is a video game studio, not a rodent.
Also, please don't hurt the Capybara's feelings, please.
No. They're chill. They're fine. They can handle it.
Yeah. So it is your setup where you've got, you know, four different colors of gems on a 10-ish by 10-ish grid. You know, it's a puzzle game, but the gems in this case are little monsters, little creeps. And you play a muscle bound sword dude. Like he looks like if Ron Burgundy was in SpongeBob is the best way I can describe it.
Okay.
and you start at, you know, at a fixed place on that board, and basically you draw a line from you through as many monsters of the same color as possible. And you can move to any of the 9 adjacent squares from any square, so you can kind of just scribble around the board as long as you're all on the same color of monster. Certain items or monsters allow you to change colors, so you can make your line even longer. And when you've gotten it as far as you can, you press go. And then your muscle man, sword man, proceeds to ruthlessly murder every single creep that you drew a line through, just rampaging around the board and chopping people down. And you have to clear a certain number and accomplish other goals to beat the level. But absolutely hilarious and a ton of fun.
Yeah, this looks really, really fun. I'm going to download it on my iPad tonight.
Yeah, and because it's Apple Arcade, like this is the pinnacle of this should be a like have some kind of stamina system and or have some kind of like, you know, do you want to buy more floopty floops that mm-hmm. allow you to go for longer or whatever? And because it's an Apple Arcade game, there's none of that. You can just keep on playing, which I'm realizing is an incredibly dangerous thing.
Maybe that was there for your protection.
Yeah, it's for their money and my protection. You know, when you look over the clock and you're like, 1:30, and I told myself I was going to go to bed an hour and a half ago, but I'm on a roll.
Yeah.
Looking over, it's too, you know, it is just,
I can't stop on a win.
I will prize feeling better now. Feeling good now is better than feeling good later.
Yes, yes. Or being able to hold.
It's from the future.
Yeah, yes, very that's... much so.
Quite possibly the most human statement I've ever heard.
Yeah, so you know they have a bunch of wrinkles to it. Different enemies, basically, some have as you're going. Every creep you go through, at least basic creep, increases your attack power. And then there are some enemies that have hit points that you need to be at a certain level of power to go through them. So yeah. It's like, okay, to move through this guy, you need to move through at least five people before him. Mm-hmm. But he's something that lets you change colors, but you know there's good loot on the other side. And so you know they've got a lot of creative ways to play with the base formula of just tracing the longest line possible. And I'm sure there is a level of thinking where you pay attention to like how things will fall once you draw your line, because the grid refills by dropping enemies from the top down. Mm-hmm. So there's an ability to think ahead a couple turns
that I was going to ask, I'm sure exists. If there was a combo game going on.
The combo is all within a single turn, which is how you draw the longest line possible. Mm-hmm. So you can set that up, but I'm just not, I haven't had to, and I'm not good at thinking like that yet.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it is, I'm sure I'm sure the whales know how to do it, but and again, there's no whaling in this game. So,
right.
I have become the whale and I have become the anti-whale.
Yep.
It's the tale of two games for me.
Very cool. Grindstone. And the art style is amazing, which I would expect no less from Cappy. So
yes.
Yeah.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where usually we ask you a question and then you answer it. However, this time we turn it around. Every five episodes or so, we do a free play where we do kind of a traditional Q&A style thing. I always proctor these, so I will take us through them. First here, we have Ollie, who writes, in the wake of Terminator Dark Fate tanking at the box office, a lot of keyboard warriors have been spouting off about Get Woke, Go Broke in relation to its focus on female characters. Something similar has happened with the most recent Star Wars movies. Do you think that these kinds of people can actually have a negative impact on game sales, a traditionally male-heavy demographic, i.e. they intentionally negatively impact a game's sales because they think it is too quote-unquote woke? Short answer is no. Long answer is no, with more of my usual bloviating. It's very funny to me that people would be offended that Terminator would be a story that has a female main character. Terminator, the series who, when they did a television show, was called the Sarah Connor Chronicles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what were you expecting, dog?
These assholes will go to any length to make a bad faith argument that always leads to either misandry or white genocide. It almost always goes back, if you pull enough threads, goes back to anti-Semitism. And really, they are such a small sliver of the market that they cannot materially affect the sales of a game. In fact, and this is the point where I remind you, woke brands are still brands. Movie studios and game studios are still businesses trying to sell you things. Things will be marketed as woke because A, it gets people to, it gets people like this to raise a stink and do free marketing for it. And B, it makes people go and buy it because they believe that, yes, I am supporting the good thing. I think that wokeness in general, is a factor in the marketplace, but I do not think a vanishingly small sliver of the market, speaking speaking in a louder voice than they should rightfully have. Their bark being louder than their bite, etc. I do not think that they can tank the sales of a thing. Go look at the top movies grossed of all time, etc., etc. They'll look for anything that stumbles in order to say, see, there's a woman in this, and there you go.
God damn it, who put a vagina in here?
So I think there's potentially a point behind this in terms of, like, just, you know, doing something just cynically in order to be woke is probably a bad idea and likely could come back to bite you. However, I think the problem is that there is tons and tons of examples of, you know, movies that have movies, games, whatever, that have female leads that are, you know, actually at the very least are actually good, or at most, you know, having a female lead adds something to the story. I think it's a thing, you know, it's one of those things like all lies have to have a kernel of truth.
It's a matter of I'll let you finish.
No, I mean, just, yeah. So I think there is some truth in that. I think the deeper message of, I feel like the deeper idea of, like, movies with, or games with women, or with, black characters or whatever, don't sell. I just don't see that. You know, it seems like that becomes less and less believable with every year.
It's not borne out. Simply isn't borne out. Additionally, these jackals will constantly move the goalposts about what is or is not considered to be woke. It's kind of like that. There was a tweet. It's like a fun joke that gamers think that there are two genders, male and political. There are two races, white and political. There are two hair colors, brown or political. Just basically anything that is not representative of the stereotype that whatever aggressive exclusive stereotype you want to think is automatically political. So they will keep on redefining it, and the truth is that demographically these companies will make stuff to reflect the growing portion of the market, and guess what, a great number of people in the world are not you. And guess what? If something being made superficially not for you is a big enough turnout, or is a big enough turnoff that you set about, like, doing some kind of emotional violence to people, then, well, fuck you. Sorry.
I want to throw out a point.
Yeah.
That Terminator had 6 writers and none of them are women. So I don't know if this is, like, the best movie to defend as, like, the bastion of woke culture.
Oh, I'm not defending as a bastion of woke. That sucks that it doesn't have any of those. Additionally, like, did anybody ask for a new Terminator movie? That kind of seems the bigger
reason. I think the two we had were more than enough.
Yep, the two we had. Yeah, that is a good point, Ben. Thank you.
Yeah. So I mean, that's just the truth, you know. And I think it's funny for me because, like, I'm someone that, generally speaking, like, when I play a game, you know, actively, you know, usually, like, my quote unquote, like, role playing is, you know, try to customize my character to be as much like myself as possible, just because, you know, I kind of find it interesting to be, an exploration of what would I be like in this situation. So, like, usually if there's an option to play, like, a white male character, that's probably the option I'm going to go with.
Yeah.
But even from that perspective, I've found that, like, a situation where that's either not an option or, not the option that actually I go with, because it's, you know, that character isn't actually, you know, say, much like my playstyle or whatever, like, seems weird to me for about, I don't know, the tutorial,
and then
it's fairly irrelevant.
So, like, if you are not given the option to make, as a white male, if you are not given the option to make a character that looks like you, chances are you are playing as a predefined character, and odds are that character looks a lot like you. Otherwise, you are playing as a character who is established in the fiction, and you are inhabiting them, not inhabiting yourself, right?
Right, exactly. And it's a thing where, at least from what I've found, like, even as someone who, like, because of how I approach that, like, initially that it tends to feel a little weird, mm-hmm. you know, it tends to feel a little weird for a very, very short period of time, mm-hmm. and ultimately has no impact on my enjoyment of the game. So I feel like that's, you know, maybe that's just my experience, but I feel like looking at other people, it doesn't seem like I see a lot of correlation in terms of, like, you know, video games that, you know, male, you know, white male friends of mine are really big fans of, and, like, characters they really like, and, like, them actually, you know, being male or whatever, it doesn't seem like people actually care about that. It just seems like some people talk a lot about caring about that.
Yeah, no, there are people
who...
I've been a long way
to say something really easy.
Ben, how about you?
About what?
Do you have anything to add on this?
Question? Yeah. The only thing I can think of is I can always compliment BoJack Horseman. Like, they have a 50-50 writer's room of male and female. And, there's one episode in the latest season that addresses a point of, like, it just gives a good speech about a woman's perspective in the Hollywood industry. So, I don't know. I think it's, like, things like that can only be derived if you have people who are writing characters like themselves. I think it's similar to, like, the idea of Donald Glover making Atlanta, like, an all-black writer's room. Like, mm-hmm. I think that... In some cases, like, it's good to do that type of thing,
yeah.
So that, like, that you have a clear voice on a subject. But
the one thought I had when contemplating this was, you know, that a lot of times the safe bet tends to be what you've done before, mm-hmm. Which, just because of the way marketers have decided video games are going to be, often looks very white and male.
Yeah.
And so a thing that could influence the way that, you know, anyone is looking at it is like, oh, well, look at all these safe bets that are doing fine. And then your, you know, new things, new ideas, mm-hmm. Specifically from the, you know, take of who's in the leading role, what perspective are you talking about? You know, almost as much a measure of, like, hey, they're trying new things. So the volatility, more likely to soar, more likely to bomb, mm-hmm. is higher than your established known world safe bet. That doesn't really hold, though, for Terminator Dark Fate, because it's an established universe. Mm-hmm. So I think it was just a bad movie.
Yeah.
but I think there are a million other things to contribute rather than that.
Yeah, you just to sum up my takeaway, be skeptical of woke brands and woke multinational corporations, but be derisive of anybody who tries to tell you that wokeness is a problem in your day-to-day life.
Word.
Cool. Mike writes, there is that classic quote about the Velvet Underground. They didn't sell a ton of albums, but everyone who bought it went and started their own band. What is the Velvet Underground of video games? I'm going to say The Legend of Zelda.
I was gonna say, that's a really good question, by the way.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's a very good, mm-hmm. very good question. Legend of Zelda, for sure. The original one, NES.
It's not a video game, but I wonder if MS Paint doesn't deserve, like, a place somewhere in here.
Ooh, yeah.
just the creation engine that was. Little Big Planet would be the modern version of that, but I feel like that's too on the nose.
Yeah, I feel bad because I said Legend of Zelda in terms of, like, broad inspiration, but I don't know that that's, like, an obscure thing that, like, where everybody played it went and made a. I feel like that would be, like, I don't know, something Bennett Foddy made or something.
Yeah. I think I was going to say Myst for my answer.
Yeah, Myst is a good one. But that was one of the top-selling games of all time.
Yeah. It inspired The Witness, so I'm still going to say it.
Yeah, so I don't think either of these are probably good examples for precisely the reason that, you know, they kind of did eventually or immediately gain popularity. But I feel like there's got to be games like, you know, Stalker or, you know, the Soulsborne games that, you know, kind of, you know, became cult hits and a lot of people riffed off of them.
Yeah.
Although I am not well equipped to, like, actually answer this.
So, like, the thing is, like, to know this, like, the only people I know who make games are independent developers who make a very particular kind of game. So it is hard to extrapolate to everybody else. Like, I jumped immediately to The Legend of Zelda because that was an inspiration for Dark Souls.
Sure. Interesting.
So is Stalker or something like that your answer, David?
Yeah, I guess if I had to give an answer, I kind of honestly, my answer is like, I would love to see a Watch Out for Fireballs or something like that on this, because I think this is a really interesting question. It's just unfortunately a question I am very much not equipped to answer.
I feel unequipped to answer it as well, because I can't come up with something that satisfies both.
I like how this part of the podcast is like sitting near a escape place in an airplane where it's like you have to give a verbal answer to the question.
Oh, did you have anything?
I wonder if Mario belongs on this list just from the sheer number of 1-1 replicas there are out there.
Maybe, but like, I don't know. Mario.
It's not as underground as the Velvet Underground.
Yeah, this is a tough. Yeah. I don't know. If I think about this, if I come up with a better answer between now and next time, I will share it. But yeah, this is a difficult question, Mike.
I distinctly remember talking about on this show when I played Slime Rancher and realized that all the chickens and slimes or everything are very static models that don't really have a lot of moving parts. Mm-hmm. And that feeling of like, oh, I could do that. I could make a slime. Oh, my God. No, I know that's hugely reductive, but that is the closest proxy of that feeling that I can think of off the top of my head.
So, yeah, when the veil of video games starts to be lifted.
I'd be interested. I wonder if it seems like I see a fair number of games that will sort of name drop the Vampire the Masquerade or whatever. And that was a game that my understanding was didn't do particularly well.
Yeah, that game didn't do particularly well, but that hails back to like System Shock, and even that hails back to like Wasteland. Wasteland would probably be the closest thing to it to like a real answer I could give on this, because that inspired a bunch of stuff.
I think with Vampire the Masquerade, it's like if this can be this broken and unfinished and still good, I can do something.
Oh man, I like that game quite a bit. You keep Vampire's name out of your mouth, Dennis.
I said it was still good.
Yeah. Did you have an answer? You can pass as well.
For inspirations?
Yeah, I mean, just to defer for Mike's question. I don't know. I don't think we got one out of you.
Yeah, I think, like I said, Slime Rancher comes to mind. I also, the only game that I've played and then looked up a tutorial for how to make like games is XCOM. Gotcha. Where I've actually gone and like looked up, okay, how do you make a grid based game? Type of stuff. Didn't follow it very far down the path, but so that and Slime Rancher are the two games that I've had that I can do this to response to.
Gotcha.
XCOM's a good example for something that kind of created its own subgenre.
Yeah.
If I was going to be maybe a little bit snarky, I suppose you could say Rogue.
Yeah, that would probably do it, wouldn't it? Yeah, Rogue. Rogue or NetHack. Dwarf Fortress as well. Dwarf Fortress is a huge one.
Yeah, Dwarf Fortress actually is probably a good example, just because it seems like there's been a number of games that explicitly try to replicate the, you know, we're just going to make a game that's way more complete and complicated than it needs to be side of it.
Yeah. We have a few answers in there. Carson writes, coming from your watch out for fireballs about The Last Express, what is the best or worst or most insane reveal of a mystery in a game or media? So spoilers are off on this. Or you can just name the game and then we can infer what it is.
Yes. I'll say Knights of the Old Republic for mine.
Like insane is like, whoa, I can't believe they, oh, that changes everything.
Yeah, it was a good surprise.
Yeah. Oh, so best. I am leaning more on the for my own answer. I'm drawing from the worst or most insane.
Most off the rails.
Yeah.
I'm gonna just jump in with Would You Kindly? Like, oh my god.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, yeah.
And the interesting thing is, I played BioShock, got the reveal. Enough time passed that I forgot the twist. Played it again and got retwisted.
Oh, you got double twisted.
Because it was like I know there was something. Somebody is not something, or there was someone something that was. Who is the? Oh shit! He's beating himself to death.
oh man, David, how about you?
So I think 343 Guilty Spark is pretty good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It becomes a different game at that level. Yeah.
Yeah. And just the fact that, like, they were pretty successful in Hide It. Also interesting in terms of being pretty successful to Hide It is there are a number of secrets in the... you know, kind of original incarnation of Fallen London, and then also at least one that I'm aware of in Kingdom of Loathing that the developers basically asked people not to reveal, and it is very, very hard. Like, even if you're just searching the internet, you know, you generally cannot find someone that's, like, spoiled it.
the improbability of that.
Yeah. I do have one I wanted to ask you about, actually. What'd you think of the plot twist for Stalker?
Can you remind me of what the plot twist is?
The plot twist that and this is spoilers, that, you know, your mission in the plotline is that the powers that be basically captured a whole bunch of stalkers and that wandered into the deepest part of the zone.
Oh,
and
that
sent
you're,
them to
the, you're
kill
the,
a man.
You're man the guy that you've been searching for?
Yep.
Okay.
And just the fact that the plotline is straight up just they kidnapped a lot of random people and one of them happened to be the guy that they were kidnapping people to send after.
That's pretty awesome.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, obviously it didn't leave that much of an impression that I didn't immediately jump to it. Not that it's bad.
That just always struck me just for being so, like, just kind of weird.
It is pretty weird. Yeah. For me, I'm going to go with the end of, let's say 2/3 of the way through Indigo Prophecy or Fahrenheit. You know, same game, different names, where you learn that the conspiracy is being run by a personification of the internet. You think it's the Mayans, but it's actually this cyber being that was influencing the Mayans that maybe landed here on a meteor. And they are like floating polygon men who fight and kill you by touching you. Yeah. It's really bad.
Someday he will make a game that doesn't go off the rails.
I mean, Ben, you said that
today is not that day.
I mean, Heavy Rain doesn't necessarily go as far off of the rails, and I like the twist in that. And Ben, you said that Detroit was not necessarily as off the rails as other stuff that he's done, right?
Yeah, Detroit stays pretty grounded, I think, quote unquote, for as much as you can with
being
that genre.
Cyberpunk. Yeah. Dan writes, what's your favorite gaming soundtrack? I'm going to assume that's what Dan meant instead of saying, why is your favorite gaming soundtrack? well, what is your favorite gaming soundtrack? Mine is awarded to Skyrim. I have never completed it as I keep getting progress-stopping bugs, but I can always listen to the soundtrack. It's atmospheric, calming, and it is also excellent for helping me concentrate as I work from home.
Wait, are you listening to it while you're playing it? Because that's not being productive when you're at home.
I mean, Dan's probably doing what I do, listening to game soundtracks.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I've got go-to answers for this one. Let's say, so if from an indie, let's go with Machinarium.
Okay. Ooh, good answer.
Yeah, and for like mainstream, Chrono Cross.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with Faster Than Light for mine.
That's a good one.
I don't have anything coming to mind.
No?
No, by time listened to, just because of college, is probably the Halo soundtrack, but I feel like that's not a real answer.
I got a lot of play out of the I know you like this game, Sound Shapes, that soundtrack. Specifically the Jim Guthrie one, the corporeal mini EP that he did with that.
What was the Beck song in that?
I forget. He did it. Like, there's a Beck song in there.
Yeah, I'm going to listen to it after this podcast.
Yeah. How about you, David?
Man, this one's tough. I'm not sure I have a great answer. The original Planet Side had a surprisingly great soundtrack. I really like the Castlevania series for their kind of hybrid classical music rock and roll songs they tend to have.
It's really hard to go wrong with Castlevania.
Yeah. In terms of soundtrack that is most like scarred into my memory, though, it would definitely be Dragon Quest.
Yeah.
Just like the various overworlds. Yep.
Nice. Yeah, and a lot of these you can find on Spotify or on other streaming media services. It's a goddamn renaissance when it comes to easy access to video game soundtracks. Let's see here. Greg writes, what's a game that you keep going back to play again and again and again? This is probably cheating, but Picross.
Good answer. I've got two that pop immediately to mind. First is XCOM, and then second is Puzzle Quest 2.
Oh, yeah.
I never finish it. Just go back to it.
You just get about a third of the way through it every time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is, it's not a bad way to play a game, you know?
No. I mean, and that's not like a game that like requires a story or mechanical payoff. Like, you are performing satisfying tasks the entire time, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. How about you, David?
I'd probably have to go with Warframe. I realize that's an incredibly obvious answer from me, but
it was made to do that.
Yep.
I'll say another one that's probably obvious for me, and I'll mention a brief story. It's probably The Witness for me, and I didn't mention it in the grind, but over the weekend I played it with my dad because I keep trying to get him to play the game. And so like, I took him to one of the areas where it showed like the introduction to a rule or whatever. And we were able to complete that section together. You just passed off the controller for each puzzle. So that was really nice. Yeah.
Very cool.
Nice. Let's see here. Christopher asks a pretty tough question. What is your favorite film from another country?
Oh man, this requires me to know what films I've watched are from other countries.
Yeah, that's tough. Like, I generally don't sit down to like specifically watch a foreign film. Yeah, this is tough.
I got two in the hopper. I'll say Songs from the Second Floor is really good. I think it's a Swedish movie. I forget the name of the director. It's like Roy something. And then Kin Zadza is a really good science fiction movie that's Russian. There's a bunch of other good Russian science fiction movies as well, so those are probably better, but that's the one that came to my mind first.
Yeah, the only one that I've watched recently that I have good things to say about is Stalker.
Mm-hmm.
But I have severe problems with that movie anyway. I don't.
So did the director, because it killed him.
Well, it killed half the cast and crew. Yeah. Well, maybe the director shouldn't have had all those people paint the grass.
Yeah. Like,
not to blame the victim or anything, but yeah, I will say Stalker for right now, for lack of a better, more thoughtful answer.
Yeah, I'm looking through a list of like top, you know, foreign films of all time, but this seems very weighted towards old films.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna have to keep on looking. not even.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can I go like Ip Man or stuff like that?
You can. I'll feel a little bit sad, but
this is very fair. I'll get something.
Yeah, like you know, Old Boy would be a good. David, I'm sure you have a good answer for this because you're really into, you know, martial arts film.
Yeah. So Old Boy is a good one. I would definitely go with The Raid. And The Raid 2, if you're really into action movies, also in similar feelings, Ong Bak and Chocolate are both very good.
Oh, shit. Pan's Labyrinth.
Like the French movie with Juliette Binoche and Johnny Depp?
I think you're thinking of Chocolat.
Oh, excuse me.
Pan's Labyrinth is a good answer, Dennis.
Yeah.
So... Just two others. The Big Boss is I really love it just for the way it ends, which is basically it's you know, Bruce Lee, you know, kills off, you know, all of the bad guys, and then the police roll up with him surrounded by dead bodies and proceed to immediately arrest him. So it's the only realistic ending to a movie. And then, sorry, just one more. If you're looking for comedy, I highly recommend it. I linked it in the Slack. My Mighty Princess, which is basically a movie about a girl whose family is basically like Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon level martial artists who is trying to live a normal, you know, college life.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Can we take another pass? I want to recommend some more movies.
I went and looked because like I was positive there was like some J horror stuff that I forgot about. Audition is fantastic. Yeah. Funny Games.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not J-horror, but, you know.
Chevalier is a Greek movie that's a satire about masculinity that's really good. Mm-hmm. And then there's a deep cut. Anything by Gaspar Noé is really good. But then also there's a deep cut of a movie called Evolution that's by the wife of Gaspar Noé. That's a really good movie that nobody's ever seen.
People get it confused with the David Duchovny movie called Evolution. Yeah, so there's a few answers for you, by which I mean several. Stephen asks a seasonally appropriate one. When do you set up your Christmas tree?
Never.
Not yet.
I lost my Christmas tree in a move, and I don't know if I would set one up because of Greta. I think it would be an attractive nuisance for her. Fair. Yeah,
I feel like Greta would love it if you set up a Christmas tree.
Yeah, my feet wouldn't because she would break the ornaments and I would step on them. And it would hurt extremely badly.
I think what you need to do is just get a green, vaguely triangular-shaped cat tree for Greta.
That might actually be a good idea. Christmas cat tree. Yeah.
Mm.
In my family, we never really put it up until, like, after, like, the first week of December. It was never, like, Black Friday. We're out there decking the halls or anything. Yeah.
I think we'll probably be up before Thanksgiving, but we'll see.
Yeah. You got kids like that. That's a way for you
to
ensure their behavior. You're just the constant reminder of Santa watching them. Yeah. Yes. Finally here, Martinus asks, what's your favorite gin, if any, and how do you prefer it served?
I'm not a fan of gin. I'm sorry.
I don't mind it, but I do not know enough about it to give a educated preference for it. So
yeah, David, I know that you have thoughts.
Yeah, so my go-to is Gordon's. It's affordable, and it was good enough for James Bond. And my go-to cocktail is a gimlet.
Yeah, for me, you know, I will drink straight gin, like just with a, you know, just chilled like that. That can be fine. I don't necessarily get fancy with it, though. Usually I just mix it. So I end up with something, you know, just not bottom shelf. Like it's not in, and I'll get something that's in a plastic bottle or whatever. But like New Amsterdam or like a Seagram's Seagram's Extra Dry or something like that. Just whatever, like a fifth of it is like $12, which is good.
So what I'm hearing is that you don't set up your Christmas tree, you drink your Christmas tree.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I will take that. I will take that.
Little Matt.
This makes me want gin. It's been a while. Been all since I had some gin. Nah? Oh, well.
I always come around and be like, oh, maybe I just need to give it another try. And then I do, and I'm like, nah.
Oh,
Have you tried it mixed?
Yeah, I've always had it in different ways, different styles, etc. It's just it's never connected.
Yeah.
Try gimlet sometime. It's a good chance you'd like that.
What is in a gimlet?
It's half gin and half roses lime juice and nothing else.
Gotcha. Yeah, I usually do gin and tonic because I am basic. Also, I use diet tonic water because fuck drinking your calories if it's not the alcohol.
Wait a second. Tonic water has calories in it?
Yes.
I did not know this.
Yeah.
Your world was shattered.
Yeah. Like tonic water that you would get to, you know, like make a gin and tonic with. Yeah. It has like syrup in it. It has a sweetener to specifically to offset the bitter. Maybe there is a good tonic water, like fancy tonic water, that doesn't have you know, that doesn't have as much
simple syrup or something.
So that's all the questions. Thank you, everybody. That was a good sizable multiplayer. If you would like to participate in these, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast and watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about the things that are exciting to us in the world of video games around us. I will go with a brief one here at the start. We've got the Google Stadia coming out here real soon on November the 19th. I am not necessarily like that excited about that. It's, you know, who knows? Let's see if Google sticks with it. Maybe the technology will be good. They have announced the games that are going to be featured on it, and there's a lot of stuff that we knew about. Like we knew there would be Assassin's Creed. We had a pretty good guess that there was going to be some Tomb Raider stuff on there, etc. The thing that excites me is more like just. I don't know, like what's the emotion that you would say, like if you saw somebody doing something stupid and you're like, hey, look at the balls on this guy.
Yeah.
Because they are apparently so confident in the like in the performance of this thing that some of the like two of the launch games, one is going to be Thumper, which is an incredibly difficult rhythm game being played with network lag, so they've got to be damn sure that they've got to be damn sure that the latency is going to be nothing if they think Thumper is going to work on this thing.
Yeah, I think they more want to be able to say this thing even has Thumper on it more than they want to be able to say like it and it works.
We were dumb enough to try, not we were good enough to succeed.
Yep.
Well, do you have any feelings about Guilt, the game that's coming out, since it looks like a horror game?
I have not. I'm curious now that you mention it. I've not really looked into it. Guilt. Yeah. Oh, that's exclusive. Is that a time exclusive?
I think we talked about it a long time ago, like maybe a year ago. Or
so. That reminds me. No, I have no feelings about it. So
I feel nothing.
I do not feel like I do not feel like I'm going to spend $130 on another streaming box. I've got those. It's fine. But
got that box checked.
So what's the, do you know what the details are? So you pay $130 for this, and then on top of that, you have to buy the games that are out for it, right?
I think it's a monthly subscription thing.
But so, it, is it 130? Wait, what?
So you buy the box, and then you pay the monthly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha. Yes. You pay them once, and then you pay them every month.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. And I'm not sure, like, I mean, if Guilt is good and that's the only way to play it, and like it is an earth shattering thing, I believe that like the Stadia console is not necessarily the thing you need. Like, you can just buy the subscription and stream it into like a web browser, like stream it into Chrome. I'm not sure. They've not been especially good about communicating about this.
Wait, I thought that was the whole point of Stadia. If you have to buy a console, why wouldn't you just buy a console?
I don't know. Yeah,
and that's where they go, but streaming, and then they distract you with a bunch of numbers.
Right. Yeah. But, you know, there's some big stuff on here. They've got Destiny 2. They've got Red Dead Redemption 2. Stuff that would be really, you know, just pretty intense to stream. Like, you know, if they can pull it off, it will be cool. But yeah, I was just like, these guys put Thumper in this? What the fuck are they thinking?
Well, that's like Street Fighter V was on PlayStation Now or some shit like that.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. I think I'm happy that I do think that this is the direction that video games will head in, because, you know, it's like, it's weird that like the big development between PS4 and PS5 is like, oh, we finally got a solid state drive, you know, something that's been around for the last 5 to 10 years, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
this is definitely something new, at the very least. Mm-hmm. It's a new business model too. Yeah. Let's see here. Sorry, David, what you got?
Yeah, so there was a interesting study that measured reaction time in video games and found that apparently it's the point where it starts to degrade due to age is at 24. They also found that increased skill as, you know, one gains more experience does not appear to offset this in terms of reaction time, although I do feel that they tend to overlook the fact that, you know, youth and reaction time is no match for age and deviousness.
Which is like age and Ritalin, or...
Yeah, you know, as you do. So, you know, if you're more than 24 years old, apparently you've already lost your chance at becoming the next, I don't know, esports.
Carpe.
Becoming the next fatality, the next fatal 1T.
That is yes. The only thing holding me back.
Like, occasionally my mom will send me something on Facebook about somebody who got a big prize purse at a competitive gaming thing, like, hey, you can make a bunch of money doing this. I'm like, Mom, those kids are 18 and strung it on drugs. They burn out of it at like 22. Like, no, that ship has sailed.
To be fair, that is probably the argument that I think is most compelling for esports is a real sport.
I mean, it tracks, doesn't it?
Yeah, you're not a real sport, and until everyone is using performance enhancing substances and, you know, burning out by the time they're old enough to be president.
Screw that. Show me the concussions.
Bleak.
That's this episode, man.
Yeah.
Gotta commit.
Well, I mean, I'm excited about this because that means it's not my fault that I'm bad at things. Yep. Let's see here. Ben, what you got?
I got nothing.
Atta boy. Dennis, rent us out.
Yeah, so there's a streamer, I have to assume it's pronounced Ludwig, that his jam is jamming on the buttons in Mario Party, specifically Mario Party 4. And there's a mini game there where you gotta like just you know, press a button really, really fast, and then it counts up presses in the space of God, I don't think it's a minute. It's definitely not a minute. It's a very short amount of time. But he broke the record. Previous record had been 199. He slam jammed those buttons all the way out to 201. This is most notable. Like, you know, it's kind of a dumb record. Like guy has the highest score in a Mario Party game, but it is notable when you realize that the tool assisted run is around 160.
What?
Yeah, see, so there's a tool assisted run for this game.
Is it because the tool assisted run it does it go by frame?
You know, I can't tell you the science of it. Or yeah. I can't tell you the coding of it or whatever.
I could see that being the thing. I could see the tool assisted run being tied to frame rate somehow.
But couldn't you just wire the control into a microcontroller and send it out at, you know, several gigahertz?
I don't know what the limitations are. I just know that clearly the humans are still in control.
For now. A tenuous kinda grip.
Yeah, it's kind of fun because the like visual of it is all these thwomps, I think, or whatever, kind of getting dominoed over. Mm-hmm. And his score goes on for so long that it actually gets past the end of what they rendered for like the road it's on. And so then it's just off into nothingness.
Does he talk about his technique at all?
You can watch it. The best description that I had seen was it's like a squirrel filing its nails. it's just holding the controller in one hand with the button out towards the other hand. Mm. And then the other hand kind of almost like a vice around the side of the button so that you're just smacking up and down on the top and bottom of the controller. Mm-hmm. For style points, he also did it as Luigi. So I think this is the true year of Luigi.
So I'm still on the assisted thing. I wonder, could you simply like attach a TENS unit to someone's thumb?
What you're talking about is turning them into some kind of electrified mannequin, David.
Yes, that's exactly what I'm talking about.
Okay, I intended for that to horrify you, but you just got more enthusiastic, so...
Yeah, I'm talking about when the human is the weakest link, you just need to build a better human.
Making super bees. Yeah. So... that's cool. I need to go through that. I just did talk about something you age out of. God. What does that guy's like wrist tendons look like?
Yeah, well, and how old is he? That's what I gotta know now.
He's 4 years old.
Yeah.
Oh, so how do you all feel about buttoning it up?
Let us button.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to this episode of The Level. We really appreciate you tuning in. I can't think of too much to announce right now. Dennis, give them a final call to action about Deck of Wonders.
Yeah, get the Deck of Wonders prototype as a print and play. It is solitaire Hearthstone with legacy mechanics and is super, super fun. It is available at bit.ly/DOWGFM. You can get on the print and play special edition prototype where half the proceeds go to development of the final game, half the proceeds go to the 612 Humanitarian Relief Fund, which supports protesters in Hong Kong.
Fantastic. And for us, you know what to do. Ratings and reviews, subscribe, all those things. I've been Cole Ross. You can watch my streams on Twitch at DuckVTV.
I'm Dennis Furia. You can find me on Twitter at Deck of Wonders with underscores between each word.
I'm David Meismith. Buttons.
I've been Ben Merkel at MerkleB on Twitch.
And stick around for some titles. I'd forgotten about 13 Assassins, David. I haven't watched that yet, but Takashi Miike has done. I mean, I mentioned Audition, but
he does so many films.
Yeah, he does several a year.
So does he? So he did the addition.
I believe he did.
He did.
That's interesting knowing it, just because, like, in retrospect, I mean, it's basically an action movie, but, like, it has some very horrifying, like, very, very powerful scenes that, in retrospect, it's like, oh, okay, that makes sense.
He does some really horrifying movies. It's a thing that he sometimes does. And also, like, weird romantic comedies. No, I just,
to be fair, the addition was kind of both.
Jesus. Another one I didn't mention, Blade of the Immortal, is really good as far as Takashi Miike goes. Anyway, titles.
Yes.
So, real quick, just as a thing, I looked up the company you were talking about is B-Flow, and they have a job opening in Los Angeles for bee pollen consultant.
What?
Yeah, you know.
Actually, strictly speaking, it is a Argentinian company. So, strictly speaking, they have a opening in Los Angeles, California, Estados Unidos.
Hmm. I like that. I like the Spanish pronunciation of our country's name better. United States or Estados Unidos.
I'm a big fan of the Chinese pronunciation, but just literally beautiful country.
Huh.
Hmm.
Weird. So who has titles?
I just got one.
Okay,
double. Go. Remurder. Or Remurderer.
Okay. So I have Red Rummer, though.
Yeah,
yes, I have that.
Okay. So three of us have Red Rummer.
And one has Tree Murder.
Yeah. Okay. What else do you have, David?
I also had I Am a Fledgling Whale. And then I had For Their Money and My Protection.
I like that. Okay, Ben, what you got?
Two more innocuous ones. I have Basically Nothing, which I could go in almost any episode. and I also have David, I Know You Have Thoughts.
Oh, when I was throwing to him about gin.
Yeah, yep.
I know that David likes gin. David, he likes gin and he likes cider.
I just like the quote. I also like to misquote people on the show or put their quotes out of context.
Yeah. So I had Remurder, I had Red Rumor, and then I have HSSN, Home Steam Shopping Network. Yeah. Does Red Rummer sound good?
Yeah, sure.
Yep.
Okay. By the votes, it gets it. Cool.
Democracy. Nice.
Yeah, we're getting close to toady time.
Yeah, we are. Yeah. That's crazy. Time goes too fast.
I know, right? This year is just gone.
I
was going to say, what do you think of, it seems like everyone's doing, the whole, not just like, oh, game of the year. They're like, oh, what are the games of the decade?
We could do that.
I don't know. I feel like that's kind of.
I don't know that I would have a very good answer for that. I'm very bad at even making. What's that?
Can you divorce a game from its context?
A decade's a long time in game stuff. Yeah. And also, this isn't actually the end of the decade. I know that's not what's important, but.
Wait, it's not.
Yeah, but to be fair, the way things are going, we might not get another one.
Yeah,
no, so.
we might as well throw it in. Yeah. All right. Well,
all right.
I'm gonna go, guys.
Yep. Good night.
Not even go to bed. I'm just gonna go. I need to leave.
I can't be here anymore. No, I gotta go to bed. I'm very sleepy. It's been a long day. Cool.
Thanks, guys.
Yep. Take care.
Peace out.
Bye.